Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com and this is Larry Brooks. Larry is the best-selling fiction author of 5 thriller novels and several non-fiction books for writers, including Story Engineering, recently out on Amazon and other bookstores. His blog, storyfix.com, is also one of the top 10 blogs for writers. So welcome, Larry.
Thanks, this is great. Glad to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. So why don't you start by giving us a bit more about your background in writing and publishing?
Sure. I actually started teaching writing before I should have, because I was active in the corporate world writing stuff for money that I didn't really want to write. And I was always working on novels and screenplays on the side, and some people locally knew that. So they asked me to start teaching writing. And it was actually through the teaching of writing that I got interested in actually doing it in terms of fiction, novels, and screenplays. So I've been doing both of those things a long time, teaching it and writing it. I have a whole trunk load of unpublished work from long ago that taught me a lot. I actually ended up, I think, learning the most that I've acquired knowledge about novel writing from movies, from studying screenwriting. I brought that to the whole challenge of writing successful novels. And they're very similar. A lot of novelists don't like to believe that, but writing screenplays and writing novels are way more alike than we want to admit. And so I've just developed both of those things together, and the novel side of my work popped first. And in 2000, I published my first novel. And as you say, I've published 4 more since then. 4 of them were with a pretty major Big Six publisher. And the 5th one was with a smaller publisher. And meanwhile, 2 years ago, I started my blog site, storyfix.com, and have been very busy, as you know, as a successful blogger. It's very intense. You know, you have to, it's almost like publishing a newspaper. You have to almost every day bring something new to it. So, unfortunately, the novel writing kind of went on hold while I was writing about novel writing. And the blog sent me down a road where I've gathered enough linear information, or a curriculum, if you will, and that's what ended up being Story Engineering, which is my new book about how to write stories. So that's probably too much, but that's where I've come from in this stuff.
All right, so your books, as you mentioned, your book, Story Engineering, brilliant book. I've read it myself, fantastic, highly recommend it to people. And one of the things I wanted to pick out, it's quite near the beginning, you've got this quote, which is brilliant. What's your quote? I'm quoting you. When it comes to storytelling, pain is optional. Now, yes. I don't think people believe that at all. So what does that mean to you? What about the tortured artist myth?
Well, I think it's a really good question. And the whole phrase tortured artist, I think, comes from one of two places, often both. A lot of us write because we need to unburden ourselves. We need to get something off our chest, which means we're not necessarily tortured as a writer. We're tortured as a person. Mm-hmm. So we choose writing as a catharsis, as a way of self-therapy, as a means of getting in touch with people and working stuff out in our head. So from that, I can't really speak to that professionally. Not that I'm not tortured in that way myself, because I'm human, but every writer who has something to say might lay claim to being a tortured artist writer because they really need to say something. That said, let's set that aside. The other part of being a tortured artist is that you're really not confident with or comfortable with the skill set, the methodology, which means it's really hard for us if we don't know how to do it. I mean, imagine trying to fly an airplane and you don't know how to fly an airplane. You really want to fly an airplane, really interests you, it looks cool, and you actually need to get from point A to B, and there's the airplane, but you don't know how to fly it. You would be a tortured pilot, wouldn't you? You'd probably be a dead pilot, but nonetheless, I think the analogy is apt. People have read all their lives, and through reading, yes, they gain some intuitive learning curve on how a story is built, but what happens is, they sit down at a keyboard or a blank page and they start to write a story using only their experience as a reader or some inaccessible kind of vague learning model they've gained at workshops or how-to books or something. And they sit down to write and they realize how hard it is. And it tortures them. and they actually can't get from point A to point B in their story without a bunch of pain, hence the tortured artist. I think that pain is optional. And having read Story Engineering, you know why I say that. There is not a formula, but there's a set of physics. Just like in any mechanical endeavor, even intellectual, there's a set of physics in human psychology. You sit down and talk to a professional psychologist, and they're listening to you and they're helping you work stuff out. That psychologist isn't making up their therapy as they go along. It's based on something. Same thing with a storyteller. A successful story is based on certain physics. Certain things happen in a certain way at a certain time in a story. Now, it's highly flexible, which is why it's not formulaic. But that's what my book tries to communicate, is that once you learn these physics, once you learn this structural sequence of a story, you'll start to see that pretty much every story observes it. Just like, let me go back to the airplane analogy again, just like every airplane, no matter what it looks like, no matter how fast it is, small it is, an F-18 or a little Cessna, they all use the same physics, and they all get from point A to point B, perhaps in a different way, but using the exact same set of fundamentals, principles, and physics. Storytelling is just like that. There's no difference. So my book talks about what those fundamentals in physics are. I think, dare I say, in a way no one's really heard spoken before. And I did that not because I'm some freaking genius. It's because I wasn't getting it from the traditional literature of writing.
I think that's great because, you know, some people can think it's some kind of mystical ability that you need to put a story into place. And your book really breaks it down. So let's delve into it a bit more. You've got the six core competencies that form, you know, the backbone to the whole book. So perhaps you could briefly outline or, you know, list those six competencies, and then we'll get down into a few more.
Sure. Well, I think right before we open that can of worms, if someone were to say, wait a minute, Larry, there's way more than six things we need to know to write a story, they'd be absolutely right. In fact, there could be 60, there could be 600. There's just an infinite number of things we need to know, not only about the physics of storytelling, but our own story and about ourselves in order to write a story successfully. Well, 60 is too many, really. I mean, imagine sitting down to cook something and there's 60 different ingredients on the table. I mean, that's just ominous. It's not going to work. So when I started thinking about it, I saw an affinity in six different things. I like to think of them as buckets. Six buckets of skill sets or realms of knowledge that we can wrap our head around that group together naturally. So someone says, well, I don't have a concept for a story. I have an idea for a story. Well, there's an affinity between an idea and a concept. So they're in the same bucket. I call the bucket concept, by the way, and that happens in six different buckets, six different core competencies, and I've tested it, and I haven't heard anything thrown at me that doesn't quite naturally, and in a few cases, a little bit of a force, but for the most part, doesn't fit into one of those six buckets. It's kind of all there is. So rather than trying to learn 60 things, why don't we start by wrapping our head around six things, because within those buckets, within these separate realms, there is a set of standards and criteria and actual definitions that apply to everything in the bucket. So if bucket one has 22 things in it, the reason they're in the same bucket is they all have the same standards and criteria, which are different from bucket two. So to answer your question, among the six core competencies, four of them are what I call elemental. They're elements of the story. There's four different things you need to bring to a story. And they're realms. So if you don't like the word that I use to describe one of them, put your own word in there. But basically, you can't really push back too hard against these realms. And the reason that's valuable, before I tell you what they are, especially for two of them, a lot of writers didn't know they were different. They didn't separate them. They had them all mushed together. Maybe because a writing teacher that taught them that didn't know the difference either. And that's just not good enough. It doesn't break it down enough. So the four elements of a story are concept, which wraps in the idea and the premise and the genre and the whole kind of high-level description of the story you're going to write, idea being a very powerful word. And I like to use the qualifier, it's a what if question. It poses a question in a way that demands an interesting answer, and then you have a story. If the question at the heart of your story isn't interesting, maybe the story is not going to be interesting either. So the second one is character. That's obvious. You ask a lot of people, what's the one word that describes a story? They say, they might scratch their head and go, okay, character. I don't agree with that, but character is essential. We have to have a hero, and we have to have an antagonistic force who may or may not be a person, which may or may not be a person. The third bucket, the third elemental core competency, is the story's thematic resonance, its power, what it means, how it relates to real life, how it makes the reader feel. That's the one that people get mixed up with, both concept and character. They think that theme is something that if you write your character well enough, theme will just kind of happen on its own. That may or may not happen. You stand a lot better chance of being successful with theme if you understand it as a separate core competency and actually engineer it into your story. Now, the fourth element of the four elements, which are a subset of the whole six core competencies, is the big one. And that's structure, or what I call story architecture, and what a lot of people have known for decades as plot. It's literally the sequential, the choices that a writer makes to sequence the dramatic narrative and unfolding tension and resolution of their story. Huge can of worms. And that's where the movie industry really has a lot to offer us, because once you know what that is, not a formula, it's physics, you'll see that almost every story unfolds and progresses pretty much the same way. It's physics. Just like an airplane goes from a dead stop to a taxi to takeoff to cruise to descent to landing, right? It's a very apt analogy again. That's exactly what a story does. It goes from a dead stop, slow movement, sudden takeoff, cruises around, makes some turns, and then suddenly, hopefully doesn't crash, but it comes back to Earth and stops. It's a flight. So those are the four things. The other two, I mean, all of that's theory. So what do we do with it? Well, the other two are the executional. Now, if you type executional in a Word document, you get a little red line underneath it. It's not really a word. So go with me. You know what I mean. They're the essence of execution of your story. And there's really only two things we do in writing a story. We write scenes and we write sentences. So the first of those two is scene execution, which is a whole microcosm of storytelling. Each scene could be viewed as a short story or as a microcosm of a bigger story, which means it has its own structure. And the last one is the one that everybody starts writing because they think they're good at it, and that is the writing voice. How eloquent we are, how poetic we are, how funny we are, how sarcastic we are. If you're an English teacher, how grammatically perfect we are. That's writing voice. So to wrap all that hot air up, six core competencies: concept, character, theme, structure, four elements, and then scene execution and writing voice. Those are the six core competencies. And there's really nothing else in writing a story that doesn't go into one of those six categories.
No, and that's brilliant, and everyone's just going, wow, you know, is that it? And I say that because your book is very, I say dense, and when I say dense, I mean full of value, in that each of those are broken down in great detail. So if people yes. want more, looking at your book, you know, there's a lot of detail below that overview. So we don't have time to go into all of them right now, but I actually wanted to specifically ask you about scenes, because when I tried to write my first novel, Pentecost, it wasn't really happening until I discovered scenes, and your book would have been very helpful to me. And when I broke everything down into scenes, it just worked more. So maybe you could explain a bit more about what is a scene and how can people break their story down into scenes?
Right. Well, there's two ways to write a scene. In a way, there's two ways to write a story, a book or a screenplay. So scenes and books being, you know, just bigger versions of the same challenge. One way is you just kind of come to it in the sequence of what you're writing, and you just kind of write what seems to be there, what's intuitively obvious, and you lay out a bunch of stuff. The other way is to know exactly what that scene has to do. Now, having read my book, you know that I strongly advocate story planning. In fact, we can't avoid story planning. Writers who write a book what they call organically or by the seat of their pants, which myself and others have called pantsing. When they do that, they're just story planning because they're looking for their story. You can't finish a successful story without looking back at it and having to answer the question, how did I plan that story? Well, you either planned it out ahead of time, or you planned it as you wrote it, or you wrote it all wrong and realized what you did wrong and went back and rewrote it, which is another form of planning. Well, scene writing is very much the same thing. And I'm really glad you asked about that one core competency, because people ask me frequently, because I still teach a lot, they ask me frequently, what's the best writing tip you've ever heard? What's the most powerful thing? If I could do one thing differently or understand one thing, what would it be? And it has to do with scene writing. And it is this. And you know what I'm going to say, because you read the book. Every scene should be mission-driven. It has a mission. It has an assignment. It has something very specific it needs to achieve. Now, a lot of new writers err on that because they go, yeah, I want to show my character's sensitivity in this scene. No, every scene is obliged to demonstrate characterization. So that isn't the mission of your scene. In fact, a scene, now with some exceptions, but let's just be general here, a scene that the writer intends to be nothing other than showing who the character is a weak scene. Because every scene needs to contribute something to the exposition of the story, the actual sequence, the forward motion of the story. So the most powerful writing tip I know is to adopt a mission-driven scene writing strategy. And once you know what the mission of a scene is, and by the way, there shouldn't be two or three things that a scene does plot-wise. There should be one. Imagine it as a series of cards or puzzle pieces in a linear puzzle, just one. Once you know what that is, then you're free to make the creative decisions that what I call optimize that scene. Make it the very best scene it can be. And you have to look at what kind of scene it is. Is it a major scene or a minor scene? Is it a transitional scene? Is it a head fake scene that's supposed to fool the reader? What is it? If you know that going in and you know the mission of the scene, then as a creative person, well, so let's hope this is still a creative endeavor, you can go, I need to do this. Now, what can I do here? What can I do to my character? What can I put her, situation I put her in? What can I throw at her to achieve this mission? And the answer depends on your understanding of the whole, because the scene has to be in context of what came before it and what is coming after it. So you have to know the role of the scene and the mission of the scene. And once you know that, you can make a decision as to how do you do this. Quentin Tarantino, the filmmaker, has opened two incredible movies with scenes that are about 11 minutes long. Well, they really only have one mission. But Tarantino, his creative choice was to build this entire Shakespearean drama around that one moment in the scene that is the scene's payoff. Every scene needs a payoff. You can actually isolate almost every effective scene down to one sentence, one moment, where the mission is there. And if you watch movies and read books and look for the mission of the scene, you can agree or not agree with the writer's choice of how to get there, but you can see that there's a mission there. And that's why this isn't a formula. It's still so creative. You know, all bets are off. You can write the scene any way you want. It's going to fail, though, if you use the scene to explore what ought to happen next. You need to know what's got to happen. And once you know, you can write the heck out of that scene by being a dramatist, being an artist, being a creative person who has concocted the coolest scene ever for whatever this mission is. Now, it may be real fast and easy. It may be kind of vague, but it still needs to be optimized. And the mistake writers make is these scenes drag on and on and on, sometimes with nothing to contribute to the story, sometimes with too much to contribute to the story. So I think that's what I believe strongly about scene writing. Isolate it down, get a mission, and then craft something wonderful around that mission.
No, that's great. And two specific follow-up questions from that. Sure. Does a scene have to be in one single point of view? Because people often get concerned with point of view. And two, yes. Is a scene a chapter?
Yeah, can be. It depends. James Patterson writes, novels with 140 chapters. It's really 140 scenes. John Irving writes books with 8 chapters. But each chapter has 12 or 14 scenes. Mm. So that isn't really, it's a great question, but it isn't the answer. In other words, you need to, every time you change time, place, or point of view, you have a new scene.
Mm.
If you want to create a new scene within a chapter, I use white space.
Mm.
You skip a line. Certainly, if you change point of view, pretty much inflexibly, you need a new scene. You can't jump into one head and into another head, even in third-person omniscient narrative. You can't do that until you write a new scene.
Mm.
I would suggest that if you're changing point of view, it actually should be a new chapter. Short, many short chapters is kind of the new expectation in today's commercial fiction. So it licenses us to put a chapter number over every time we change point of view. But if you change time or you even change location, now there's a little exception to that. You can have a scene where two people hop in a car and they talk until they get someplace and you've just changed location. That's okay. But if you're got a scene in the morning where they're planning the crime that they're going to do that afternoon, and then you cut to the afternoon when they're actually doing the crime, those are two different scenes.
Mm.
Maybe not chapters, white space between them.
Mm.
That's why the mission-driven thing kicks right back in there. You can't have a mission, really, that takes place in two different places or two different times or from two different minds.
Mm.
So every time you switch time, place, or point of view, the mission of the scene actually changes. It shifts, which means if you stick to this rule, because it'll keep you safe, you should start a new scene.
No, that's fantastic. And I really urge people to think about their novels in this kind of way, because that made a massive difference to me, was breaking it down. And even if people have a book already in front of them, they can still go back and try and break it down into scenes, can't they? You can, and then find the missing stuff and then restructure it. You're not suggesting people have to restart the whole thing.
No. It kind of depends on what got them to the point that they're at when they make the decision they need to change something.
Mm.
May very well result in restarting the whole thing. It's really hard to make that call. But you'll find that this mission-driven scene thing is very addictive because it's so effective. And you'll realize once you get it and you're working on a manuscript, work in progress, oh gosh, I've got a bunch of scenes here that are too vague. They don't really go anywhere. And you're going to want to redo that. One of the greatest mistakes writers make is once they learn this stuff, they're so in love with what they've done, and even though they realize it doesn't adhere to the principles, they don't want to change it. Oh, I'll do this with my next novel. Well, okay, you know, who's to say? But you're always going to be better off if you stick to these physics. It's not Larry Brooks' physics. These are universal, the physics of dramatic theory, the physics of commercial fiction. That's what this book's about. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really cool, Joanna, is that, and I hope you agree, once you view this stuff from this paradigm, if you will, where you've got these six buckets of information, you've got these six skill sets, these six realms of competency that we have to bring, you start to notice things when you read books and see movies that you never noticed before. You'll notice that the story changes at about the 20 to 25th percentile every time. Sometimes subtle, sometimes huge. It's called the first plot point. Now it has a name. If you didn't know that, you might go, okay, I'm gonna do my shift on page 8. No, that's a hook. That's not a first plot point. And even if you have a great hook on page 8, you still need a great plot point on page 70. You need to change the whole story on page 70. You need to throw a wrench in it that completes the part one setup of the book and launches it in a new direction. And this is kind of what the book's about, is this bringing writers this awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could show you. I literally have hundreds of emails from people going crazy with awareness. I mean, they're just so jacked that, you know, it's like, I'm a good storyteller, they say. I'm a good writer. I've written 6 unpublished books, and I don't really know why, because I'm really good. Now I know why.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the physics. It's just like, if I may use another analogy, in sports, a great athlete who's fast, strong, and smart isn't necessarily going to be the best player because they have to know the game.
Mm.
So our talent and our creativity is like innate in athleticism, but you have to get into a game that has rules, it has opponents, it has lines on the field, and you cannot play outside the lines and play the game successfully. no matter how fast you are or how strong you are. So I love that analogy, because we really are creative athletes as writers. And we're playing a game. We're playing a game with our reader. We're playing a game with the people we want to buy our books, the publishers. And we're trying to sell something within this story. Sell emotion, sell a point of view. That's kind of, you could equate it to a game. You can win little, you can win big, or you can fail, you can lose. And the physics are what's going to help us win.
Mm. And what about the criticism that inevitably people have, which is the word engineering and these rules and everything? You know, where's the space for creativity when we're having to apply all of these rules? I know you have the answer for this. So.
Well, I just did a guest post for someone. I wish I had it nearby, I may, where I quoted T.S. Eliot. And if you bear with me, I should have that in front of me, but I don't. Anyway, he said something like, when somebody tries to do anything intellectual without boundaries and rules, if you will, principles, they may or may not succeed. But when there are parameters in place and the mind is restricted, the creativity is ignited to produce better work. Because without that, our work tends to sprawl. I can think of one of the most famous writers in the world who can't write a book under 1,000 pages because he rejects this stuff. I promise you, that writer, who I won't say the name, wouldn't get published today, wouldn't even get a contract. But because he's already so rich and so famous, he could put his name on a phone book and call it a novel, and it'll sell. So somebody's going to publish it. But I talk to people all the time that no longer read this person because his books just kind of ramble. We don't want to do that. Again, it's not a formula, it's physics. And I guess the difference comes down is a writer needs to decide, am I in this for me or am I in it as a profession? Am I seeking to become a professional writer who either sells my work to a publisher or publishes it myself and sells it to a readership, which is just as professional? Or am I just in it for me? Because if you're writing a diary, you can write anything you want. No one cares. If no one's going to read it, you can also write anything you want. But the second you say to yourself, I'm a professional, I seek to be a professional, I aspire to be a professional, by definition, you are signing up for an avocation where there's a marketplace. And the marketplace dictates, I don't like to call them rules, but they dictate principles and they dictate expectations on you. And you have to accept them or not. If you don't accept them, you won't succeed in the marketplace. It's like food. There's expectations in the marketplace for food. If the food's ugly, old, doesn't taste good, and isn't nourishing, which is probably a lot of fast food, it's not going to work. Nobody's going to buy it. Something about the food has to work. It isn't raw. It isn't, you know, so exotic that no one can stand to eat it. It works because it adheres to principles on a commercial level. Exact same thing with our fiction. I think after reading the structural paradigm of the book that I only clarified and invented, it's dramatic theory, there are infinite combinations of creative ideas that anybody that claims this is formulaic, they're just coming up with some way to voice their resistance to the discipline of it. You know, one quick analogy I use, look at our faces. Everybody on the planet has basically the same shape head. We don't have a lot to work with. We have a mouth, a nose, two eyes, hair or not, and two ears. That's it. I mean, that's, you know, if you want to get specific about eyebrows and stuff, I think I counted once, there's 11 different variables. That's all. Now, how many people have lived over the course of time, and how many people are walking around on the planet right now? And with only 11 things to play with, how many people other than twins look exactly the same? Are we formulaic? Darn right we are. We're humans. We don't look like dogs. We don't look like fish. That's our formula. Storytelling's the same way. Don't call it a formula. It's a certain expectation, certain standards, and physics. And that's what the book's about. And it has nothing to do with restricting creativity. Because I'll promise you this. People who don't do this, if they reject it because I'm creative, I can't do this, I need to do this my way, okay, your way, you're going to write a book without a hero, You're going to write a book without dramatic tension. You're going to write a book with seven heroes instead of one. You're going to break every rule because you're creative. Guess what's going to happen? No one's going to want to read that. It's not going to work. So basically what you're doing is saying, I want to be experimental. I want to be an artiste. No, that's not what I said earlier. No, I thought you wanted to sign up to be a professional and to find an audience. Because the second you do that, you're stepping on the playing field between two lines and you better play by the rules of the game or you're not going to make it.
No, that's brilliant. And I totally agree with you. And I would say to people that I've found more creativity within those boundaries, as you say, it really works. So absolutely brilliant book. Okay, we're out of time. So tell us where people can find you and find your book.
Well, the book's called Story Engineering and the subtitle is Mastering the Six Core Competencies of Successful Writing. It's from Writer's Digest Books. I'd like to say it's going to be in a bookstore near you, but there's a lot of countries in the world that aren't going to take it. And even a lot of the bookstores here, a lot of the writing books don't get mass distribution like novels. It is on Amazon.com. It has been the number one bestseller in its niche for a while. I think it's number three this morning out of several thousand books. So I'm still happy with that. Then again, it's new. So Amazon or BN.com or most of the other kind of obvious online resources will have it. My website is storyfix.com, one word, storyfix, and there's a link there to Amazon, and you can Google it. I mean, it's at the corner of Barnes & Noble where I am right now, and so, you know, it's pretty easy to find if one wants to. If they forget the title or anything, you can go to Storyfix. By the way, I have to admit, much of what I write about is backlogged on my blog site, so if somebody wants to really plumb the depths of where this came from, you know, I have about 300 archived posts there that all adhere to the six core competencies. Everything I write's kind of attached to that. So, you know, I hope people stop by. I'd be honored if people would, take a shot at the book. And, thanks to folks like you who found it useful, it's working pretty good. I'm really excited about what's going to happen.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Larry. That was great.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.